It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to Raven Radio KCAW in Sitka. Today is Monday, May 6th, 2024. I'm Brooke Schaefer with Raven News. The Sitka Assembly is advancing a candidate for the municipal attorney position to a second round of interviews, though they're keeping the position open to new applicants for the time being. The municipal attorney position will be vacant this summer when Brian Hansen retires. Anne Marie Billingsley was one of two candidates who interviewed for the position in late April over Zoom. Billingsley is a graduate of the Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, Oregon. She has practiced law in Alaska for the last 14 years, six of them as an attorney for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. She's also worked in private practice and as a pro bono attorney for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. At a special meeting on Thursday night, the Assembly voted unanimously to advance Billingsley to a second interview. Billingsley's interview will take place on Zoom at a special meeting on May 9th. If the interview goes well, the Assembly may invite Billingsley to visit Sitka in person for a meet and greet. The U.S. Coast Guard rescued a man stranded in the Keku Strait near Kyu Island Tuesday night. The man, who rescuers declined to name, called Petersburg's police department after an inflatable kayak containing all of his supplies washed away. He reported that he only had his cell phone and a small ammunition bag with him, and as night fell, he said he was rapidly becoming cold. The department contacted Coast Guard Sector Southeast around 9:30 p.m. The Coast Guard then issued an urgent marine radio broadcast and contacted the Alaska Troopers and Cake Search and Rescue. Neither party was able to respond. The troopers were too far away, and Cake's rescue boat is currently out of commission. So the Coast Guard dispatched an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter and a crew from Air Station Sitka at around 10 p.m. The crew safely recovered the stranded man near Devil's Elbow Cabin, a popular bear hunting spot, and returned to Sitka later that night. The U.S. Forest Service is revising its long-term plan for the Tongass National Forest. The previous plan is 25 years old and was revised in 2016. The agency will spend the rest of this year gathering public input and then take the next couple of years to finalize a new plan. Barb Miranda is the Deputy Forest Supervisor for the Tongass. She spoke with Coast Alaska's Angela Denning about the Forest Service's process to make a new plan. She says the entire thing relies on public input.
For the first time in over 25 years, we're going to go through a major overhaul of the Tongass Forest Management Plan. So the things that have changed in those 25 years, think about every town in Southeast Alaska, their economy, the tourism demands that have changed, the way we've extracted resources from the Tongass has shifted remarkably in those 25 years. 25 years ago was the end of the pulp mill industry. Now we're looking at second growth wood and how to utilize that in our local economies and for local sawmills. The climate, our understanding of climate change and how that's impacting the forests around us and the waterways around us has changed. Our population has shifted, and there's an increased demand for recreation, conservation, and restoration on our forest lands. So we're revising a 25-year-old plan with the new planning rule that will give us a plan for the next 15 or so years.
So why should somebody in any town in Southeast care about what's in this plan?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we all know, those of us that live here in Southeast, the Tongass is our backyard, our playground, and most of the land surrounding our small communities is the Tongass National Forest. So if you care about what happens, you know, what kind of actions can take place in the area immediately around your town or those places that are special to you and special to all of us at, where we go berry picking, foraging, the access to cabins, all those things are going to be included in this high level plan and will guide how the Tongass is managed for the next 15 or so years.
What is the public process like for this long-term plan? I know community meetings have been held throughout Southeast in April. How can the public get involved now?
Yeah, great question. We're in a marathon, not a sprint, for the forest plan. We are in the first phase of forest plan revision, and we're in a phase called assessment. Like you said, we just completed our community workshops across Southeast Alaska. We've got a couple left, but we've done about 25 community workshops. And everybody will be able to see the information we received at those workshops synthesized into a report out here in the next couple months. But we also have on our website webinars, other information, a library, how to be involved. You can sign up to receive notifications about this. In addition to that, we have office hours twice a month. The schedule is on that website where people can tune in, and our planning team will be there ready to answer any questions folks might have about forest plan revision.
And how long do people have to make comments? And when do you plan to have the plan done?
So right now, like I said, we're in that first phase of planning, which is the assessment phase. It's open. We are taking comments throughout this whole year. We will have the draft assessment available for review in January of 2025. So information to feed into the assessments is most valuable between now and then. Hopefully, you know, the fall would be when we're finalizing, gathering information, and then synthesizing those into a document.
Thanks for sharing a lot of information with us. Is there anything you'd like to add that we haven't talked about?
There is one more thing. The Forest Service is pretty committed to engaging robustly, differently than we have in the past. And this plan can't be created without public input. So community voices, tribal voices, citizen voices are really important. We can't create this plan without it. So really want folks to lean in with us to develop this plan together.
Barb Miranda is the Deputy Forest Supervisor for the Tongass. She was speaking with Coast Alaska's Angela Denning. The U.S. Forest Service is partnering with Spruce Root and Juneau Economic Development Council to help with public engagement. Spruce Root is a regional nonprofit focused on the economy, and they're sharing a survey to find out what people think about the Tongass. You can find links to the old plan and survey on our website, kcaw.org. Dozens of child-sized raven's tail robes were danced for the first time at an event in Juneau last Tuesday. It's the largest collection of new raven's tail weaving in decades. KTOO's Clarice Larson was there to learn more and has this story.
There's a story behind every raven's tail robe.
So up here we have the Northern Lights with the Chilkoot Mountains. And then down here are bear prints and the salmon going upstream.
That's Aurora Sutherland describing the raven's tail robe she's wearing. She's in fifth grade and in Harborview Elementary's Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy program. And on Tuesday night, she and her classmates made history.
You have just witnessed the largest gathering of raven's tail regalia in history ever.
That's Master Weaver Lily Hope as she spoke to a full crowd at Centennial Hall. They gathered to learn the history and the future of raven's tail weaving, or Yaith Kuwu. People say the intricate art form slept for a century before it was brought back to life by master weavers like Cheryl Samuel and Kay Parker. Both were honored at the event. Another weaver, Shimlikskun Ruth Hallows, commended their dedication to passing their knowledge to others.
In 2019, there were fewer than a dozen weavers in the world who had woven a raven's tail dancing robe. Today, there are four times as many, and our numbers are growing.
At the event, people learned about the stories behind the weaving and the journey that it took to bring it back to life. And they got the first look at dozens of newly created child-sized raven's tail robes that will be on display at the Juneau Douglas City Museum soon. Not only did they get to look at them, they got to watch them come to life. On stage, dozens of students and adult dancers sang in unison to a drum beat. As they moved and twirled, the white fringes on their robes flew in the air like tail feathers of a bird. Memo Contreras, one of the students dancing, said his favorite part of dancing was watching the fringe move.
Because it looks delightful.
Marie Johnson was one of the adult dancers on stage. She says it gives her so much joy to see people young and old gather to celebrate their culture.
This is a great honor, you know, to bring something to life and to be able to just share our culture and let people know what the meanings are behind everything, because every blanket and every article has a story.
After the event, Hope says the journey to grow the number of Raven's Tale weavers is far from over.
It means we're doing the good work. It means our communities are strong. It means we have mentors in multiple cities and villages. It means the art form is alive and well, and it's just going to get bigger and better from here.
On Friday, the robes will go on exhibit at the Juno Douglas City Museum. They'll be on display there throughout the summer. In Juno, I'm Clarice Larson.
I'm Brooke Schaefer, and this has been Raven News.